Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Grey Leopard Code with Gary Norris Gray. Gary will be coming to you each Saturday, 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, talking sports live on GLC.
and they will not let this thing go away.
Yeah, for the fourth week in a row, they are the biggest game in the country. I mean, I'm watching SportsCenter come on at 7 o'clock every Sunday morning, and it's the same story, Colorado.
Welcome to the Dark Times channel. And before I get started, make sure you guys go ahead and hit that like button for me. And if you're not new to the channel and you enjoy the content so far on this channel, make sure you go ahead and hit the subscribe button for me as well. And so let's go ahead and get into it. Recently, Deion Sanders sat down with CBS in a 60-minute interview in which he was very candid, in which he spoke very honestly and very passionately about who he is, what he is, and what he's trying to accomplish.
Have you ever been so clean that you walked in and somebody looked down at you, then they looked at themselves, they had to check themselves because you were so clean? I have that effect.
That's the vibe you're getting.
I have that effect.
And one of the things I love about sports is a microcosm of how society works. Of course, not in totality, but in general. Being agreeable and having this yes sir, no sir, boss kind of mentality is almost a requirement for the so-called black man working in corporate America.
Can you talk?
Yes, sir, boss. I can talk.
And so when we see a Deion Sanders and we see somebody like Deion speaking unapologetically, speaking boldly, being who he is, we tend to root for that because that's something a lot of us will never know. That's something a lot of us will never know. And that's an experience that we can all enjoy. Even if we're not experiencing it ourselves, we can experience it through Deion. And so that's one of the reasons why a lot of people are cheering for Deion Sanders. You have a lot of people that have never watched a college football game in their lives, wouldn't know anything about the sport. But this is why Deion Sanders is able to galvanize people to be able to root for him every Saturday and be able to cheer for his success.
Who's the best coach in college football today?
Let me see a mirror so I can look at it.
You feel that?
What, you think I'm going to sit up here and tell you somebody else?
And I've seen a lot of takes on social media about Deion Sanders not doing anything for black people. He left Jackson State and he should have stayed in an HBCU. Deion is only about himself. He's only making money for himself. He's not bringing in dollars to the so-called black community. I see a lot of that. And a lot of those takes come from people and individuals that I actually have a deal of respect for. But nevertheless, I think it's ignorant. And I'll tell you why. Because what Deion Sanders is doing is similar to what a Muhammad Ali did. Muhammad Ali wasn't trying to generate black dollars for the black community because it wasn't within his means to do so. A lot of the things that so-called black people want and wish for as far as building a Wall Street, a modern-day Wall Street, a modern-day black Wall Street, the desire is good. But the reality of what you want is the total opposite. That's never going to happen. We've tried that. We've tried to collectively build together, but every single time it's been sabotaged. And why wouldn't it? Why wouldn't it be? You think people or the powers that be are just going to sit back and allow something like that to happen? That's never going to happen. But on an individual level, every once in a while you get an individual like a Muhammad Ali, like a Jack Johnson, that's unapologetic. And they're successful, and they inspire individuals, and they inspire the community to do better on an individual level. What more do you want? What more do you want? And so I think it's selfish and somewhat short-sighted for individuals to look at Deion as the black savior that's going to lift up the entire black community and bring back economic stability within the black community. That's not going to happen. They would never let that happen. And so you get an individual like a Deion Sanders who's doing his thing and doing what he's supposed to do for himself and for his family. And on the way, and by the way, inspiring others to do great things, helping others to do great things. And so the only thing that we can really ask for a Deion Sanders is not to be a sellout. We have our Oprah Winfrey's. We have our Tyler Perry's and people of that nature. And their approach is their approach. It's definitely not the Deion Sanders approach. Their approach is the keep your head down, no sir, yes sir kind of boss kind of deal. Don't rock the boat. Don't say anything that's going to make certain folks uncomfortable. And that's the norm. So when we get a Deion Sanders, who's the total opposite of that, all you really can do is appreciate it and value it for what it is. Don't try to make it into something that it was never meant to be, something that it could never be.
Sanders encouraged players to enter the transfer portal.
Straight talk was appreciated by some, but is this scorched earth policy good for college football or for the kids?
I think truth is good for kids. We're so busy lying, we don't even recognize the truth no more in society.
And this was by far my favorite segment of the interview, because this is the main theme that I've been hearing, especially when it comes to Deion. What he's doing is not good for the kids. Going to Colorado and getting rid of all those players and suggesting that they jump in the transfer portal is not good for the kids. It's too hard on the kids. And truth be told, that's not something that they really believed. It was just another excuse that they were trying to use in order to discredit Deion Sanders and what he was trying to do. Because make no mistake about it, if Deion Sanders would have kept all those players, or a good majority of those players, he would have been looking at a similar record of what they had last year. There's a reason they went 1-11. They weren't very good. They weren't a good football team. They didn't have good players. They didn't have good coaches. And somebody like Deion Sanders, with his personality and being who he is, he knew he was on a short leash. They were waiting for him to lose. They were waiting for him to have a losing season. And so Deion Sanders knew he was up against it. He knew he had to win. He couldn't just come in there and be mediocre like another coach would have been able to do. And y'all know what I'm talking about. He knew he had to be twice as good as many of us know that we have to be. You can't just be average. If you're trying to reach a similar level of success that your counterparts are trying to reach and that have reached, it's not enough to be just as good. You got to be twice as good. And that's an uncomfortable reality that many of us have to face. But it is what it is. And so when this interview asked Deion Sanders about his approach and about his scorched earth approach when it comes to these kids and suggesting that they get in the transfer portal, he asked Deion, "You don't think you're being a little bit too hard on the kids?" And I love Deion's response. I love Deion's response. Deion's response, he said, "No, I'm telling these kids the truth, something that America has forgot how to do." No lies detected, as they say. Something that America has forgotten how to do, and that's tell the damn truth. There's going to be certain kids and certain adults, for that matter, that just aren't cut out to do one thing or another, and that's okay. But the sooner you tell that individual, the better off they'll be. For a lot of those young men that were cut at Colorado, a lot of those young men will go on to play at different universities, maybe lower levels, who knows, whatever the case may be, but they'll get an opportunity to play. And then they can find out if football is for them. Maybe it is, maybe it isn't. Either way, that's a good thing. But the sooner you find out what you're meant to do in this life, the better off you'll be. You don't need somebody like Deion Sanders lying to you and lying to these kids, telling them that they're good enough to be something that they're not. That's just wasted time. Deion's trying to build a program in which the majority of his players have a shot to play in the NFL, like at Alabama, like at Clemson. Those schools are a pipeline for kids to go to the NFL, and so Deion Sanders is trying to build something similar. And so why lie to these kids that maybe aren't cut out to go to the NFL, and that's okay. They can get started on their engineering degrees. They can get started on their programming degrees. They can get started on their robotics degrees and get real. We need more engineers. We need more programmers. We need more doctors, more lawyers, and all those things. All those things are good. Everybody's not meant to play football. And so that's what Deion Sanders was talking about when he said, "I'm not lying to these kids. I'm going to tell them the truth. I'm trying to win a national championship, and I need NFL caliber players to do that." And so that was by far probably my favorite segment of this 60-minute show. He thought he was going to get Deion with the kids. He thought he had him with that one. But when you tell the truth and you're unapologetic, there's nothing that they can do. Now, if Deion would have danced around it and pussyfooted around it, it would have looked a lot different. But Deion's approach was, you know what? I'm going to tell it like it is. I'm going to tell you why I did it, and I'm going to tell you why it's a good thing. And you can never go wrong with the truth. As they say, the truth will set you free.
You left Jackson State, and you left quick. What did you tell those kids? What did you tell those kids?
I didn't leave quick. Let's find out. I didn't leave quick. I left when I was supposed to leave.
We tried to press Sanders on the circumstances surrounding his abandoning the mission at Jackson State.
Abandoning the mission? Please. These college coaches switch jobs like they change underwear. They bounce around from college to college and nobody says anything. They don't say the same thing when a Nick Saban switches jobs. They don't say the same thing when a Jim Harbaugh. And they sure don't say anything when a Lane Kiffin switches jobs and bounces around from school to school. They don't call it abandoning the mission. It's just business as usual. That's how things work in life. You're unhappy with a situation, you go somewhere else. You get another opportunity, a bigger and better opportunity, a pay raise, you leave and go somewhere else. You fit in where you get in. In other words, you get it how you live. Abandoning the mission. That's why it's important to pay attention to how people say things and how they word things. One twist of a word or use of an adjective can change the entire narrative around. And so this reporter knew exactly what he was doing. But he didn't stop there.
He's hinted the school's lack of forward thinking may have factored in his decision. But on this topic, he was about as elusive as he was returning punts for touchdowns in the NFL.
And so notice how this same reporter tried to get Deion to talk about family business. Jackson State and what happened at Jackson State is family business. If you want to talk about all the success that Deion had at Jackson State, that's one thing. But to try to stir up controversy that's not even there. Talking about he left on bad terms. He didn't leave on bad terms. Deion led Jackson State to back-to-back winning seasons. His first year they had 11 wins. The second year they had 12 wins. The most wins they've ever had. You have to go all the way back to 1962 in which they had 10 wins. And so you're talking about a coach that not only led Jackson State to winning seasons, but also landed them the number one recruit in the nation. Something that's never happened. Something that's never been done in the history of HBCUs. All these schools were aiming to get Travis Hunter. And Deion's the one that scooped in and got him. And put Jackson State on the map. Had everybody showing up for Jackson State games. And so Deion did his thing and he did what he was supposed to do. And so shout out to Deion for holding it down and not putting family business out there. Because that's exactly what they wanted him to do. But he didn't fall for the bait. He didn't fall for the okey-doke. And a lot of these individuals within sports media were sick Saturday night or Sunday morning when Colorado pulled out the win. They were sick to their stomach.
They were down 28-17 late last night. We all thought that the run was over because it just looked like Colorado State was going to finish that off. But here we are, waking up on a Sunday, and they will not let this thing go away.
Yeah, for the fourth week in a row, they are the biggest game in the country. And I was out what would have been the biggest game of the country last week. And it felt great, but it was still in the shadow of Deion. I mean, you're trying to recover or just barely get home. And I'm watching the SportsCenter come on at 7 o'clock every Sunday morning. And it's the same story, Colorado.
Another week, we got to talk about this uppity Negro. And so they can't take much more. And a lot of them are looking forward to this Saturday. When Colorado's up against Oregon and they're going to be without their best player or arguably one of their best players in Travis Hunter. And like I said earlier in the previous video, losing Travis Hunter is like losing two players. He's one of the best players on offense and definitely by far probably your best player on defense. And so it's definitely going to be an uphill battle, which is going to make it all the more exciting. Even before the Travis Hunter injury, that's a game that Colorado on paper has no business winning. You're talking about an Oregon University that had years to stack four-star and five-star players. And Colorado is just now at a place, now that Deion's there, is just now at a place where it's desirable for recruits to come. And so Deion's done the best that he could with the transfer portal, but he's not even close to what he's going to be next year. And so on paper, like I said, this is a game that Colorado should definitely lose. But that's why you got to play. That's why you play the games on Saturday. And let the chips fall where they may. And so this is going to be an even more exciting game than last week. This is going to be an exciting game. They're going to have to show out. They're going to have to show up and show out, because they definitely don't have the talent to match up against an Oregon, on paper at least. But we're going to see how it goes on Saturday. Either way, I don't think the momentum is going anywhere. I think the momentum that Deion in Colorado has is here to stay. Deion's already exceeded any expectations that the media and everybody else had for Colorado, because nobody had Colorado going 3-0 in their first three games. And there's nowhere for Deion to go but up from here. His team's going to continue to get better. He's going to continue to attract top-level recruits. And he's going to continue to build his team and do things the way he wants to do them, his way. And let me know if y'all got a chance to see the 60-minute interview, and maybe some of y'all have some different thoughts on that. So feel free to go ahead and chime in the comment section. And as usual, peace and chaos.
That was the intro to the day. University of Colorado is playing the University of Oregon. It's 13-0, the Oregon Ducks, in the first period. And we begin another episode of Grandpa Cove. Now, an article about Deion Sanders this week. It should be out this week. On BeyondSandersNewsroom.com. And even if Deion doesn't really get another game this year, which I think he will, he's already doubled the wins of last year, right? Not only that, he's put Colorado on the map. That's the Deion Sanders story. And no, you will not be hearing Coach Prime on my show, because Coach Sanders, see, we have to respect each other, and we can't let the media tell us what and who to say, what they do, who to call. Once we get in that situation, it'll be different. That's why I'm calling Coach Prime. It will be Coach Sanders on the GOC. Alright, we got a happy Latino and Hispanic month. Hola, como esta? The answer is muy bien. As we salute our new downtown. Volunteer football is the main stage. Actually, football is taking over the baseball in the last month. Last 9 days, and nobody cares. Because football is taking over. Last week, great comebacks for the SIU Salukis and the New York Football Giants. Both 20 points down, both win in the fourth quarter. Basketball and hockey camps start next week. Opening camps for National Hockey League and the NBA. News of the week, the Dodgers win their 10th National League West title in 7 years. When Seattle sweep last week, the Braves win their 9th title in the Tigers will go ahead to the wild card. Monday, Michigan State fired head coach after a sexual abuse case, allegedly. And this is the third one in the Michigan area. What's the picture there? On Tuesday, Otani had surgery. I'm ready to pitch in 2024. I'm ready to hit in 2024. I'm ready to pitch in 2025. Now, see, this is what the A's should be doing. The Tampa Bay Rays get their new stadium in St. Petersburg. It will be built in 2027. It will be finished. Meanwhile, the Oakland A's are still in limbo with legal issues in the city of Oakland and the city of Los Angeles. Los Vegas, excuse me. The French basketball star will be playing for France next year in the Olympics. Good luck with that. And in Foxborough, the Massachusetts State Police are investigating the death of the man. It was not because of the punch. It was because of other physical internal health issues. Wednesday, Deion Sanders speaks out on the death threats made on the internet of the Colorado State Rams player who put Hunter out of the game. Blackburn has got severe death threats the past week. And this is the mentality of the American mind. Milwaukee Brewers midday will be suspended 162 games for taking PEDs. Yeah, it's still here, folks. Right, Washington Nationals, John Doolittle. Retires. I remember he was a Oakland A as a rookie. Megan's Aces, A.J. Wilson. And Defensive Player of the Year at WNBA. The WNBA playoffs will start the semifinals tomorrow at 10 Pacific Time. 10 a.m. Mississippi time. The Dallas Cowboys lose their defensive star, Trayvon Diggs, to ACL injury, and he will miss the rest of the season. Both Seattle and Houston lose last night in baseball. And it remains the same when half a game apart in the AL wild card thing. As the Cubbies go one up on the Reds with a 6-0 set of the Rockies. And I want to remind people, we have a writer's strike. Now we have a automobile strike. And next week, the Congress might walk out. I don't know about you, but there's a war going on. And it's a very serious war. You better have your war clothes on. the guy wins over Edge Kim by 3 strokes. This week is Ryder Cup in Rome, the BMW Championship in England, and Simmons Bank Open in Tennessee. LPGA, last week they were off. This week is the Shoreham Cup in Spain. And this week, the Americans against the Europeans. And the Asian group, three teams. WTA, last week there is San Diego, Slovenia, and Osaka. With the Davis Cup, the finals, and Finland out the USA for the recent quarterfinals, Great Britain, and Italy also in the Davis Cup recent quarterfinals. That should be this weekend. This week also is the Alberto Open, and the Guangzhou Championship in China. American Dean Ashley Kroger wins her first title in Japan. This week is the Italian Open, the Chengdu Open, and the Zhuhan Open in China. NASCAR, last week in playoffs begins with the Bass Pro Shop night race at Bristol Motor Speedway. Tennessee, with Danny Hamlin winning. This week is the Auto Trade Echo Park 400 at Fort Worth, Dallas, Texas. IndyCar, last week the season ended and Alex Bilodeau is winning the championship. Formula One, last week it was Singapore Grand Prix. Ferrari ended the Red Bull podium streak with a victory by Carlos Sainz. Orlando Norris gave a second and Lewis Hamilton gave a third. So the Red Bulls got to get a podium. This week is the Japanese Grand Prix and Red Bull came back the last 2 days. First Verstappen and Red Bull return to form as they win practice 1, 2, and 3 to take the pole position tomorrow morning. Lewis Hamilton did not do very well this weekend so far, and he is back in the pack. His practice run was 7. You have to go through the pack to win. The Japanese Grand Prix. Next week they are off before they come to North America. They come to North America and South America before the end of the season in Abu Dhabi. I think that next 2 weeks, this month coming up, that Verstappen will win the championship and Red Bull will win the Constructors' Cup for the third year in a row. Verstappen will go 3-for-3. So it's only a matter of time now before Red Bull and Max Verstappen win their third championship in a row. Take a break.
For those of you that think that gospel music has gone too far, you think we've gotten too radical with our message, well, I got news for you. You ain't heard nothing yet. And if you don't know, now you know. Glory, glory! Woo! You better put them hands together and act like you know it's in here. Cheap peace.
Lately I've been going through something that really got me down.
Put your hands together. Come on.
I need someone to write to.
prosper. I'm more than a conqueror. Can I get a witness up in here?
Kansas, they gave Oregon score, Mississippi, Alabama, in the afternoon. HBCU.5, North Carolina Central, Florida A&M, Morgan State, Jackson State, Howard 5, FBS, last week the Lukies come back with a great win over Southeast Missouri State, a.k.a. Zemo. What do you think went down? Come back, victory for Lukies. Number 1, North Dakota State blew up Drake Bulldogs. 70-7. North Carolina State Bison, number 2 spot. 49-31 victory over Central Arkansas. SIU, North Dakota State, South Dakota State all have buys before Missouri Valley Conference play next week. Top 5, South Dakota State, North Dakota State, Montana State, William & Mary, and Iowa, number 8, Sacramento State, as they always do, the orders are always there. 15 is SIU. 16 is University of California, Davis. 23 is Florida A&M. And 25 is Youngstown State. So the Missouri Valley have 5 in the top 25. The first 2 are Missouri Valley schools. All right. Hope you enjoyed that. We get back to a couple words here. Let's go Alcorn.
That's my own opinion.
can't help you with that. Right around the YouTube. Moving on, WNBA, we get to the semifinals. Wilson scored 38 points on Saturday as the Aces sweep Chicago 92-79. And move on to the second round. Collier get double as Minnesota 40s game 3 versus the Connecticut Sun 82-85. On Tuesday, Washington was at New York, and then was at Dallas in Game 2. Into the Liberty overtime, was fouled by Washington, with Breanna Stewart getting 27 points in a 90-85 victory. Dallas wins their first series ever, as they beat Atlanta 101-79. Of Wazze scored 28 points. Enrique for y'all. Wednesday, Connecticut at Minnesota for game 3. Bonner and Thomas guide Connecticut the second round with 90-75 victory over Minnesota. Second round will be tomorrow with the best of the East, the Connecticut Sun against the New York Liberty, against the best of the West, Dallas and Las Vegas in the finals. It will be on ESPN and ESPN2. And I still say it's going to be Vegas and the Liberty in the finals, the two best teams in the WNBA. And they're both what they call super teams. That's what they are, super teams. All right. Well, I hope you enjoy the WNBA tomorrow afternoon. Michigan rolled Rutgers 31-7. Syracuse beat Army 29-16. Florida State in overtime beat the Clemson Tigers 31-34. Boise State beat San Diego State 34-31. Air Force, and has of all the military academies, Air Force is bad. And they win again 45-20 over San Jose State. Wolfpack get back as they beat 24-21 over Virginia Cavaliers. The Badgers beat the Boilermakers of Purdue. Georgia State beat Coastal Carolina 30-17. The Chandeliers. I always know the cool name, Chandeliers. And they got the scores, final scores, games in progress as we go over. And, I'm only going to go through a couple of them. Oregon in the red zone at 27-0 over Colorado. Ole Miss is beating Alabama 76. Second period, Utah beating UCLA 7-0. And second period, going to halftime. Duke Blue Devils 24-0. Maryland is defeating Michigan State. I think Michigan State is done after the incident this past 2 weeks. Michigan will not win another game, I think, this year because of the incident. Illinois is beating Florida Atlantic. These are all going into halftime. Halftime scores. Iowa State Cyclones 14. Oklahoma State Cowboys 47. And Iowa State getting back on the winning track today. If they can. Oh, update. Oklahoma State just scored. Oh, it's a 14-14. As the 12-3 games go on the Brotherhood 77 has been Wilson Rose Diamonding Ending Took Down Blues Two-Point Play Wilson Wilson in Denver. I think that's a bad beat to that coach. I need to go. Either the coach has got to go or Wilson has got to go. One or the other. And these two do not make Richardson, well, the coach was good again, but he got injured again. He will be out for this year. This week's game. But he didn't have his goal. Monday, both black quarterbacks lose, but Tomlin wins, and I don't care what you say about Tomlin. This guy gets the job done. Chubb will be out for the Cleveland Browns. He'll be out for the rest of the season with a horrible knee injury on Monday night. The game, the fourth game this week is Panthers at Seattle. Goes Bears at Kansas City. And Denver is at Indy. One of the most important games of the week for the NFL. Alrighty. We go on.
BlackAthlete.com. Looking for the definitive source for information? BlackAthlete.com, that's where it's at. From Jackie Robinson, Muhammad Ali, to Michael Jordan and Shaq, football, basketball, baseball, and everything in between. We focus on all the major players and stories, daily features, video on demand, and Black Athlete newspapers coming to a city near you. Tired of the same old sports programming? Check out BlackAthlete.com. Sports the way you like it.
don't know where they got that call from, but they need to get that guy a gold medal. That's the best sports song of all time, I think. I'm sorry, man. That's my opinion. That's gold right there. We got Tony and Michael in the middle. What's up, brothers?
What's up, guys?
How are you?
Okay. I have to play at least once a week. Yes, sir.
Well, you know what, Gag, you know what? Most martial music is in the scale of C. I would not be surprised if that song was scaled in C because of the way it's produced and
I heard other sports egos, and they don't even come close to that at all.
Well, the fact that it's in C makes it sound like a battle song. Not quite, but the best example I can think of is the Stormtrooper's theme from The Empire Strikes Back. That's definitely in C, and you can hear the difference when they go da 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 da. It's that kind of attention to detail that makes the music powerful.
Absolutely. Yeah, because it sort of reminds me. I don't know how much wrestling you guys watch, but it sort of reminds me a little bit of Goldberg's old entry theme
Exactly right.
Now that I know they stole that, not stole, but it sounds like some Wagnerian opera as he's coming in. Plus you got the folks in the background going, "Yo, Goldberg." It's funny because, music and sports literally and figuratively goes hand in hand, I remember, and this was way back in the day before everybody had walk-up music, so to speak. I remember back in the day when Sparky Lyle would come in to the game for the Yankees, they would play Pomp and Circumstance. For whatever reason, right. I absolutely don't know. But then a version of that was used for the Macho Man, his sounded like he had, the entire Mormon Tabernacle choir background thing. In the background as well.
No shit. Hit my theme music. I was in Seattle at the Kingdome, and when Ken Griffey Jr. was still there, his opening music was Hypnotized, Biggie. And
oh, yeah.
As soon as they played it, they were up and jumping. Every little one at bat, he got up, and you couldn't even tell that the ball had been hit out the park. He hit it. He hit it on a line, and the ball just kept going and going and going.
It's still going, right?
But it's a great subject. Music and sport, they're so true.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there are certain, there are certain songs that come up, and you sort of think of an event or what have you. I mean, put it this way, Alan Parsons was always a fair to Midland musician, but when the Bulls used his song for their opening intros, it became something completely
different.
I know, like the Steelers, I believe they still play Renegade at
all. They do. And Raiders with conquest.
And when the Evil Empire plays, when Mariano Rivera used to come out the bullpen.
Oh, Sandman, Enter Sandman. It's funny. It's funny. That song also has a second life at Virginia Tech home games too.
Really?
It's a whole thing because they literally, like, I guess everybody has stolen Jump Around from back in the day.
Well, because
it makes you damn tired. That's yep. why number one for me. But they use that as sort of like the precursor, and then they'll play they'll play Jump Around to get the crowd going, and then all of a sudden they'll be silent for like 2 seconds, and then you know how the haunting theme is, you know, imagine that with 75,000 folks at Lane Stadium. And then they come out, and then they come out. You know what I mean? It's crazy. It's crazy. But I don't know if you can use this as a barometer. But do you guys remember an obscure movie by the name of The Fish That Saved Pittsburgh?
Yes.
No, I remember.
If you ever get a chance, Gary, it's put this way. If you ever want to know where all those NBA intros got started, in a sense, I really feel like it got started there, because there's a scene where, now the movie is about this, obscure NBA team, the Pittsburgh Pythons, and then they changed their name to the Pittsburgh Pisces. I'm not going to get into all of it, whatever.
Right.
It has a lot of answers. But they're playing the Lakers in the championship game, and game seven is at their arena. And, they introduce L.A. And, the L.A. one is pretty elaborate and everything like that. But when the Pythons are introduced, they come in through the arena through an air balloon. They open up the top of the arena, and they actually come in the game. They actually come on the field from a hot air balloon. And I've always felt like that was where some of that stuff originated. I got to relate this story. During the time when the Bulls were in the midst of their dynasty, I was working out in North Carolina. I was covering a high school basketball game. I forget where. I want to say like it was either Hickory or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess it was senior night for whatever reason.
Right.
And this was they're playing in, I'll just be nice and say it was an old gymnasium. And now the Bulls thing is when they turn down the lights and then they put the logo on the Bulls thing, and then the Alan Parsons song kicks in.
Well, they
tried to do this with this team, but there was one problem. Damn lights wouldn't come back on. and the game was delayed for a half hour because they were trying. It took them that long. I literally almost missed deadline. I had to call the paper. I said, "You ain't gonna believe what just happened." They tried. I told my editor, they tried to do a Chicago Bulls like intro for the kids for senior night. He said, "Well, what the hell happened?" He said, "Well, the part where they turn out the lights, right? Mm-hmm. They're still off." He said, "So I'm just giving you a heads up, because like the first way, it was a 7:30 game, and our first deadline was 10:00."
Oops.
Now, usually high school games are usually, maybe an hour and a half at the most, whatever. But I was just saying, like, I'm giving you guys a heads up just in case these damn lights don't come back on. So, anytime soon.
Yeah,
so that was
yeah.
so fun. It was so that was so funny. It was hilarious. I mean, the athletic director had egg on his face, but he was like,
yeah.
It was hilarious. That was hilarious. You're going through that.
I remember the last game the Raiders played in Oakland. These guys, they played Raider Nation over and over again all
what?
Day long.
They had to get it out their system because, you know, this was the second time they were getting jilted, so I could imagine.
It was crazy.
Yeah.
We needed the Raiders though, and we needed the fact that there has to be a villain, and the NFL has made the Raiders the villain for everybody.
I mean,
it's one thing to hate the Cowboys because they're a bunch of shit, but they were talented. The Raiders are hated because they were the Raiders. They gave
the boys.
Not to mention them 85,000 lawsuits against the NFL, but you know we that's got nothing to do.
Of course not.
You know, it's funny, Mike. I think I told you that I was flipping on YouTube, and I actually sat and watched the America's game thing. On the 1980 Raiders, you know, the wild card team that bum rushed to win the Super Bowl, and they actually did a segment where they talked that was the seed of when they were trying to move to LA early on, and Davis basically said, "I'm not waiting for a majority, I'm leaving." And there was a bunch of things going on because, see, you know, people forget Davis almost messed up the merger because he wanted to be the commissioner, not Rozelle.
Right.
He was like, what the hell with this?
That would have made a great what if, because if Davis had been the commissioner, where would the NFL have gone? Would there have been a merger? Would there have been an AFL still playing against the NFL? You know, a lot of things are unanswered, and it's all because they didn't give Davis the keys to the car.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's interesting because the one thing that they did give him, remember, the AFC.
He was the American League commissioner, right?
Oh, yeah, he was the AFL commissioner the last three, 4 years. But the thing is, the one thing that they did do, they kept intact the old AFL West because for the longest time, with the exception of when I guess Seattle was in there for a little bit, the Broncos, the Raiders, the Chiefs, and the Chargers have been playing basically in the same division like forever. When you think about how you know they had to take two teams from the established NFL and put them into the quote-unquote new AFC, and it wound up being Pittsburgh and Cleveland. But they kept, I mean, the AFC West, for the most part, I mean, that thing's lasted longer than the Bolshevik revolution, for Christ's sake. That's still the one division out of both leagues that, for the most part, has all four of their original members.
That's a nice little tidbit. I think you're right.
I can't think of any other because even if you go with, say, the 1970, like that, the year of the first merger,
right.
St. Louis Cardinals, I believe, played in the old, what was it, Century Division? They were never in
yes,
the East.
Yes, they did.
Mm-hmm.
No, they were in the East for a while, too.
But I'm just saying, but they didn't originate
right.
with the East. They were, because remember, they were the Chicago Cardinals, and then there were the St. Louis Cardinals.
Right,
so
right,
they were part of, like, because the NFL had the NFL had their little LSD moments in the '60s with naming some of the divisions as well. They had like the Century Division and the couple of others. But yeah, but I believe like literally from day one, the AFC West has literally been. I mean, it was five at one point, but I think from day one. It's always been Chiefs, Raiders, Chargers, Broncos.
Broncos, yeah. Well, yeah, the Seahawks were in there at one point.
I think it was either two, 3 years later. They put them in the AFC. They put them in the AFC West. But basically, like the four originators have never. I think that's the one division.
AFL bench. All four of these were AFL bench. I don't know why it was.
Well, it's weird because.
Good. No, I mean, that bad should be on the New York Jets, the Buffalo Bills, the Tennessee Titans, and the Western. That bad should be worn.
Isn't it interesting that the Chiefs are the only ones that still,
right.
I mean, that would, Lamar Hunt has always come off as sort of not meek and mild, but that guy's got gangster in him because when it was the 25th anniversary of the old AFL, all the teams wore the 25th year anniversary patch.
Yes.
But the Chiefs are the only team still wears that thing. They have worn that thing literally from day one. And you're right, Gary. You would think that just on GP that the six remaining, you know, the I guess what is it? The eight remaining teams from the old Foolish Club should have something, even if it's just a little helmet decal or what have you. You know.
Well, you know what they got. The Chiefs have a little more than that. Quiet as kept as all the latest NFL drama came to the fore. Patrick Mahomes signed a $210 million extension to his contract. Now, he was getting $45 million a season, and with this extra money they threw in, I mean, he truly is a bargain in comparison to money that other teams have spent because he's been proven, tested, and he's shown his worth no matter what.
Yeah, he deferred a lot of money, and I think clearly it was him saying to management, sign Chris Jones, please.
Yeah.
So
the media, again, when Tom Brady did it, it's like, oh, look at Tom Brady.
They tried to make the stories sound like he was getting more money. But technically, he's not. Oh, what they basically did was modify the payments so that he deferred a lot of money. He's going to get a lot more of his money later on in his career. I mean, it's I mean, basically, he's like playing the. I mean, he, for lack of a better word, he's basically Kansas City's Robin Hood account. For lack of a better word.
Because
remember, you know, they lost. They didn't want to pay Tyreek. They tried their damnedest to not pay Chris Jones. And I think and quiet as it's kept, I think if they had ponied up a couple of extra bucks, Bienemy would still be there, to be quite honest.
They didn't want Bienemy to be there, in all honesty.
It's funny because see, and again, I have nothing to back this on. I think Reed wanted him to be the heir apparent, I think the franchise was like, we don't want him.
Exactly.
But you know what? I mean, they've been playing semi-ugly, but you know, Washington's 2-0, and Howell has played rather decently, and all those guys who were whining and bitching during training camp now, and look, as much as I go back and forth with him, I give Rivera credit because Rivera knows the deal. Rivera knows that if things go south quick, that they've got his replacement there. So he's working with him. I mean, you know, he might be through grit teeth. I mean, I don't know. You know, they play nice, at least in front of the cameras, and he did come to his defense during the time when all the players were whining during training camp. So.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, maybe Rivera sees a kindred spirit because they're both, I mean, look, you got basically a Hispanic man and a black man who know the deal in regards to coaches of color have to go through in the league. So he's probably just saying, you know what, let me literally and figuratively, let me help this brother out. And in a sense, help myself out at the same time.
Speaking of contracts, I don't know about you guys, but I'm going to tell you right now, the New York football Giants are dead. I'm going to tell you why they're dead. You give a contract to Twinkle Toes, a.k.a. Diamond, Danny Diamond.
You love that shit, but... Twinkle Toes ain't got no
play. I watched him play Thursday night.
Oh, you were the guy
watching. Michael and Tony, they are walking in,
their offense is on the sidelines right now. Let's just come right out and say it. He's not a guy that you can. He's not a quarterback that's going to win a game for you. He can do a
thing. When you bait him, you're telling the offense. This is as if I'm a linebacker. I think we're going to have a linebacker.
Oh well, no, it's simple. You make him beat you, and when you know he can't, you just because at least if Barkley is back there, it gives them a little bit. But see, what they'll probably do is put eight men in the box, though, more than likely.
Tell the truth. The organization knew that this motherfucker could not play. Now, it's one thing when you don't know and you realize, okay, let's work on plan B, whatever. It's another thing to say, we know this guy can't play. But let's give him money anyway. Get the fuck out of here. There's no way.
What about that, Michael? The offensive line stinks. They stink, man.
The line stinks. The line may stink, but the bottom line still is this is the result of a conservative organization that has a certain attitude towards players
towards the kind of players, and that manifests itself in the team that lines up on Sundays. You know, unfortunately, that's what the fans bought. The Giants are IBM. They're old school, they're conservative, and they're not like the Jets who want to be, say, Apple and do different things and be innovative and try shit. Even if it doesn't
work,
at
least they're
practicing.
I believe the Giants are going to win another game this year.
They'll probably schlep their way to a few more wins. But see, the thing, end of the day, he's a glorified Dave Brown.
Thank you.
He's a glorified Dave Brown. He's getting, you know, he can move a little bit. You know, his arm strength is, but see, the thing is, the Giants are like IBM, like Mike said, in the sense where they actually are still in that hole. They still don't really want to deal with a black man as the face of their franchise, unless it's a certain, even with some of their greatest black players, and LT comes to mind in regards to that. LT was, you know, always, it seemed like, was it me or was LT always holding out for a few more bucks every year?
Yes, he was.
And that's when he was good. That's when he was on coconut. LT had an attitude. And the Giants didn't have that attitude before he showed up. So better or worse, they knew where that Brett was butted. Even Parcells, when he was coach, understood that I have to make an exception for LT because this guy has dogged him, and he makes my team better, and he makes players better. Now, they drafted four linebackers whose talent was great enough that by themselves they were a solid unit. Him, Banks, Reasons, and Carson. And the odds of drafting that and cultivating that are rare. But they did it. And only a few times has that been done. We saw it with the New Orleans Saints. You like Vaughn Johnson and Ricky Jackson, all that.
The Dome Patrol.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, where four linebackers really were the heart and soul of the defense.
Yep.
They did it. They did it within their budget.
Hey, it parlayed them into they gave them their first two Super Bowl wins. And it literally changed the franchise. Because remember, how would history have been if they drafted George Rogers instead of LT?
That's true. That's so very true.
They wouldn't win any Super Bowls.
Yeah, and here's the scary thing. Imagine an LT, an older LT, playing with, you know, Johnson, Sammy Mills, and all those other cats in New Orleans. Even near the end of his career, but that's the thing though with the Giants. So I give the Giants this much due. Young was a very good, you know, Young drafted well. He was a very good evaluator of talent, and he was willing to take. He was willing to take chances on certain. I mean, you know, Sims comes to mind because you know when he got drafted, he was. In a sense, he was like Danny Dimes because he was an obscure player who had third and middle in talent. But to Sims's credit, Sims.
Sims had a personality. This guy had no personality at all.
But see, I don't give a damn about the personality. It's about what you do on the field. And he hasn't done, you know, he had one in over his head season last year. And he basically was Scott Mitchell. Scott Mitchell parlayed one season where he sold Marino. And the thing, and I'll say at least this much, at least Jones has a little bit more talent than Mitchell, but that's like being the world's tallest midget. That's like being the world's tallest midget at this point in time right now. But, yeah, it's you know, again, it goes with the Giants and there's conservative mentality, and also it goes with the league in the sense where they still want to have the white quarterback be the face of their franchise.
That's right.
And you know, and it's not, you know, again, he's not even really like mediocre. He's just, you know,
He's okay.
Yeah. I mean, he's, you know, especially when you consider, the history of quarterbacks that they've had come in there, you know, that, you know, they've had Hall of Fame quarterbacks there. You know, I mean, Eli, you know, how do you feel about Eli? Eli's probably going to get in the Hall of Fame. Tarkenton, of course. I mean, even in those bad years when Tarkenton was there, I mean, they're, you know, they were playing that 1980s offense back in the 60s when they had Homer Jones and but
that's
those guys.
True.
And Homer Jones
made me a Giant fan.
You and a bunch of folks. They, you know, that offense, back then, if I remember correctly, either it was his first year or his second year in New York. Here's the thing. Long before the Vikings had that scoring record, I believe it was, and this was even before the when the league switched over to all passing, basically in the 80s. The Giants had that record for the longest time, and it was only like a little over 300 or so points or so. But back then, because it was still sort of that, you know, cloud of dust, 3 yards in a cloud of dust.
Yeah.
The funny thing with them is they couldn't even do the dust because they never really had that dominant run. They didn't really have that dominant running back because, remember, when Ron Johnson got there in 1970, he was their first 1,000-yard guy. And think about the running backs that the Giants have had over the years. And Ron Johnson was like the first 1,000-yard rusher that they had, like 1970. Remember, they had Gifford back there. I mean, Gifford was like a dual threat. If they had put Gifford just at running back, he probably would have had maybe a couple of at the very least 1 or 2,000-yard seasons. But they used him as a hybrid, and you know he wound up being more of a wide receiver than a running back.
You gotta remember that.
Everybody has that. Everybody's got those. So you know, everybody has at least one or two throwbacks that they wear. The Patriots have been wearing. You know, Patriot Pat they call them. They'll throw them out there once a year. I'm still waiting for the Eagles to bring back the white helmets.
Yeah. I'm waiting for
I'm convinced because they went like 2-11-1, I believe, in I think that they like burned them forever and said we'll never wear these jerseys again. But I'd much rather see them wear them than those.
Bill Bradley, Steve Zabel, and a couple other players, you know, Tom Sullivan, they all had those jerseys. They look good in those jerseys, but that's about all they did in those jerseys. They sucked.
I hope they never wear
a midnight green jersey. I don't want
they're one of the 85 teams that feels the need to wear a black jersey once a year as well. Apparently, they're bringing back the, for lack of a better word, the Dick Vermeil jerseys for one game this year as well.
Evergreen.
Yeah. The ones that look like sort of a practice jersey.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. That's good.
Mm-hmm. It's
and,
you know.
And the Giants, I'm telling you right now, the Giants need a bit of great edge back on again.
Well, no, they go back and forth because they did that back in the day. Sometimes they would wear the gray pants. Back before they used to wear the gray pants, they did go all white with the red.
Right.
You know, a lot of these. Yeah, wait, but this was like. I guess the like 40s, like, you know, pre, this was
Yankee Stadium.
No, they've always played in Yankee Stadium. That's never changed. It's just that they've had, you know, they had those gray pants. They had the gray pants. Well, because remember, if I remember correctly, when they, like in the 70s and late 60s, they had all white then, but their dominant color was blue.
That's right.
Because I always liked those old style helmets that had the NY, and it had the number. I always liked they had the number decals on the back of the helmet. I always thought that was kind of cool. I mean, I think we all identify with the football we liked growing up, and, you know, 72 is a litmus year for me because, not so much because of the Dolphins or anything that had to do with that, but just, you know, that was when I really started to get into football. And also, the old Sunoco had these, like, they were playing, they had these player stamps. And basically, you remember those? They had like a stamp album. They had a stamp album and my dad bought the original one for me, and the actual album had some stamps in there. But see, there was a Sunoco literally right up the street from me, and after I filled it with all the ones that I had, I literally kept making a beeline to there. The guy got tired of me coming there. But I was determined to fill that whole thing. There were a handful of teams that I got all of them, but a lot of them it was still. But it was just fun because that was my way of, you know, following football. And again, that year you had, you know, the Eagles had that particular jersey, and it's interesting because the Washington team at that time. Now,
No.
The year before, they had the yellow helmets with the red arc.
Oh, that's right.
And then in 72, that's when they switched over to the red with the Charles Bronson looking Indian on the side. they had already gotten rid of the spear by that. I think they got rid of the spear, like you said, Gary, when Lombardi got there in 1970.
The Redskins are going through 3, 4, 5, 6. Eight different helmets.
The burgundy, like, the colors have stayed the same, but they've had different variations. Those yellow and, oh, I guess, well, I'm sorry, gold, I guess. The burgundy and gold helmet, which was more gold than burgundy, with the old R, that was fine too.
You know, I like that.
Yeah, yeah. I don't think it was as offensive as the later one was.
And the buddy was the one that said because he wanted to be at the Green Bay Packers.
The whole thing was with him was, I guess, you know, the 2 years in between when he resigned and became the GM for the Packers, he was miserable. He missed coaching. And that's the reason why he wound up going to D.C. And again, Mike, that's another what if. I mean, what if Lombardi had lived, say, another 4 or 5 years? Maybe the Red Bull. Maybe that over the hill gang beats the Dolphins if they have Lombardi coaching.
You know, that's interesting comment. That's true. I'm sitting there watching the Ducks laying on the fucking
You knew at some point that defense was gonna let go. So it was just a man. It was just a matter of time. It's just now.
Did you guys see the 60-minute thing?
I have yet to see it. I've seen clips of it. I see where the women's basketball coach was upset at the way that they depicted the town of Jackson, and I guess T.C. Taylor, the head coach of the football coach, wasn't too cool about. But you know.
Well, the interviewer. See, this is why words are important. The interviewer tried his damnedest to get the AD man by saying, and the other said, What are you doing?
Well, see, like, you knew what he was doing, and he didn't take the bait. He said some honest truths about the whole recruiting process, and if you didn't like it, too bad, because the bottom line in all this was it's about competition. He made it about competition. He took a team where nobody won anything and said, I'm getting rid of it all. It's no different than an efficiency expert coming in saying, I'm going to bring in some of my own people, and I'm going to do it this way. And all of a sudden, boom, you got a better result, supposedly.
Why did you leave that to be free early? You abandoned it. No, he didn't abandon nobody.
Yeah.
I mean, what are you trying to pull here?
Well, look, all the bombast that Deion gets called out for, when you really sit and look at the whole picture, when you look at how the whole thing played out with Jackson and how it's playing out now with Colorado, end of the day, most of his venom has been like with his own, with players, and it's not really so like venom. He's been very hard on his players.
I think that's the one
consistent thing. He's probably harder on his players than any media person. To me, you sort of touched on it in your story. He sort of reminds me to a certain extent of John Thompson during his early years at Georgetown sense of, let me take all the heat and, I'll take a lot of the whatever, off the kids. And I'll take the heat. Now, it's now needless to say, it's a different era in media and what have you, back even just from the late 70s, early 80s, where you've got this, where you have the 24th.
Black Attack can do it.
Well, it's
never changed.
The whole thing is, and we've talked about this, whenever the face of a certain entity or what have you is black, whether it be music, whether it be technology, whether it be politics, whether it be sports or what have you, they're always going to go after that person. I'll give you an example. The other night, Bryce Young for Carolina, he lined up behind one of his linemen and not the center. And you know, they had one of the guys push him back, and you know, here's the thing, John Elway did that a bunch of times his rookie year. Troy Aikman did that a bunch of times in his career. And I'm sure there are other white quarterbacks that have done the same thing. But when you're trying to push a particular stereotype and you have a certain agenda that you're trying to push, that's what it is. And see, the thing about what's happening with Deion, because see, when Deion took the job at Colorado, collectively, and sadly you had other black folks saying the same thing too, oh, he's going to get his comeuppance in Colorado.
Yeah.
He's at the end of the day, he's going to have the last laugh. Yeah, they may lose today, they may lose to USC, but let's put it this way. They're already 1,000% ahead of where they were a year ago at this time. I mean, they've won 3 games in the last 2 years. And now they've already won 3 games this year. So you can, we already talked about how the only time that white media will acknowledge the Butt Sisters is when they're trying to, you know, put down a black entity. Like, you know, yeah, he's winning, but that's it. And, you know, it's going to happen. They pulled Jason Whitlock out of his drunken stupor to go after him.
I was like, Gary,
come on now. Look.
Jason Whitlock is an independent writer.
And that's even a questionable thing that he's a writer, because I can't even remember the last thing he wrote most of it, because he's, in many ways he's become like a lot of these folks, where you went from being a writer to becoming a personality. And see, the thing with him is, and you know, Malcolm talked about this back in the day, where whenever somebody black accomplishes something, they will always find another black person to feel the need.
To bring that and see,
he's very comfortable in doing that.
He's the male Candace Owens. I can't stand Candace Owens as far as I can do it.
Look, it doesn't matter if it's male or female, they will always find someone who's willing to literally, in a sense, sell their soul. But see, what's always funny is that person has their comeuppance. And see, wait a minute, I did your bidding. Why are you treating me like this?
But he takes his
honorary white man degree and thinking that he can get, you know, real thought. But see, they always run their course, whether it's Dr. Ben Carson, or Tim Scott or what have you. They always, mm-hmm. you know, at some point, they always have that moment where they basically become no man, in a sense, where the black folks don't want to be with him, and the white folks never wanted to be with him because they only used him to go after other black folks. And once they, you know, once you got turned out like the $2 whore that you turned out to be, that's what happens. Some of them realize, you know, and again, I don't think it was a come to Jesus moment. I just think it was more so, she realized that, you know, surprise, surprise, she was being used. But, you know, unfortunately, for every black successful person, no matter what the field of industry it is, they're always are willing for folks that are willing to sell their soul to play, you know, play the, I mean, you know, there's, you know, it's the ultimate house nigga, field nigga, for lack of a better word.
I was HBCU news here. You know what's going on with the MEAC and the swing football wise? Can you inform me West Coast? Because we don't get that much out here West Coast.
Well, the SWAC is business as usual for the most. The MEAC is still trying to, you know, get, you know, they're trying to add schools. What's kind of ironic now, though, is that a couple of the schools that have left are starting to have a little buyer's remorse. And ironically, the one that's having the most buyer's remorse is A&T. They're struggling on the field with their new coach. And a lot of the alumni are, you know, starting to, you know, strike back at, you know, leaving and all this other stuff. But see, a lot of the things that happened to the MEAC were self-inflicted wounds because a lot of the, you know, there's a handful of these schools that really that recognize the relationship between academics and athletics. You know, we talk about this, you know, a bunch of times, how a lot of these schools are still caught up in the quote unquote Chitlin circuit in regards mm-hmm. to thinking about athletics. And see, the ironic thing is a lot of them look at themselves as, say, the black Duke or the black Stanford or the black